It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The 10th time they've made it! They've won a playoff campaign! And they've done it at Wembley! And for the first time in 74 years, Brentford will play in the top flight of English football! And he puts it
in! Yes, it's DJ Steve. You're locked on to the Ealing Road podcast, yeah? Make sure you listen to it and enjoy it and learn all about Brentford, because it's important.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Ealing Road podcast, where this week we're going to reflect on a huge 3 points at home against Sheffield United last weekend. We'll also have a brief look ahead to Luton this Saturday. Joining me, myself, Craig, for this one is Dan. Dan, how you doing?
I'm all good. I see Mike's gone off this week. He couldn't cope with the first win in nine.
Yeah, he's pulled a sickie for this one. Mike, hope you do feel better soon, mate. But yeah, he's left it in the capable hands of the two of us. So let's see how this goes. So just before we get going, guys, please remember to drop a comment below. We do read through your comments and they help build the show as well. So they're fantastic. Thank you. Subscribe to the YouTube and Spotify channels and give us a follow on the socials. That's Ealing Road on Twitter and at Ealing Road Pod on Instagram. Dan. Let's move straight into the tweet of the week. This one's come from Charlie Trim about Onyeka scoring. He said, genuinely in shock he scored. First Brentford goal, I've not celebrated. Now, I don't know if you agree, but I think that's a bit strange, that one.
I think it's going a bit far. I mean, when he came on with a few minutes left, I wasn't confident, I have to admit, because obviously we're moving to a back five at the same time. So I obviously saw Pinnock coming off and I was like, right, this is going to be us sitting back, sitting in for the last few minutes, going back five, ready to soak up the pressure. I certainly wasn't confident, but I think to imply that you're not going to celebrate because he scored is very strange. I'm not sure what Onyeka's done to him personally. but yeah, I thought he had scored before, but apparently it's his first goal for Brentford. I thought he scored at Newcastle a couple of years ago.
No, that took a wicked deflection. So yeah. I think that went down as an own goal. The only other goal that he has scored, obviously our super fan, Onyeka super fan Callum isn't here for this one, but I'm sure the only other goal he scored was in like the first game at the G-Tech in a preseason friendly against Valencia or something like that. So, someone will fact check me on that one. I'm sure it'll be Callum if I'm wrong. So apologies, Callum, for that. Yeah. there was another tweet by the FPL Hive about our transfer window in the Championship a few years back, where we bought in Brian, Pontus, Jensen, Norgaard, Rea, Pinnock, all for around 30 million. I mean, that window itself seems to have completely changed the trajectory of the football club.
Yeah, I mean, they are still the ones that remaining from those. They're still the core of our team now. I do think it's harder to repeat that in the Premier League. I think doing it in the Championship allows them time to bed in. obviously Brian, for example, I would think you would agree he's probably a lot better now than he was in his first season, and he maybe would have struggled if we signed him as a Premier League player. So I can see how it's a lot easier. Equally, I could see how some of the new signings we have now, who perhaps haven't hit the heights yet, if we signed them as a Championship team, the likes of Damsgaard and Lewis Potter, I think, you know, we'd be saying similar things about them and how good a summer that was when they signed. So, yeah, obviously, it's an amazing deal. And obviously, that core of players is not only got us up, but they've, you know, hopefully kept us up for a third year in the Premier League, which is amazing.
Yeah. Perfect. Moving on to then Sheffield United. Obviously, fantastic result for us. A huge 3 points, especially considering the last episode we were saying that we're moving into must-win territory now. So to get those 3 points on the board, mate, how are you feeling about that one?
It was needed. Obviously, last week I was saying we need 2 more wins. I think I thought that game was our biggest opportunity to get one of those wins. And obviously the Luton game went as I hoped as well, with them losing at City. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't pretty, but all that matters was the 3 points. And now looking at the league table, you know, it's a much nicer picture. And, you know, you're looking at one more win now, or definitely don't lose. If we don't lose next week, I think we'll be all right.
Going into the game, just thinking about City being at home to Luton, you kind of thought like this was the game that we had to win. I know that I thought going into it that this is the game we've got to win, with Luton being away at City, thinking they're not going to get anything from that anyway.
Yeah, it's a 6-pointer. Like, because, you know, I mean, you can never be certain, but I was as certain as I could be. And I would say the same if we were travelling to City, or any of the bottom five are travelling to City. I was as certain as I could be that, you know, they would probably lose. And obviously, that is the definition of a 6-pointer. We would, you know, in the potential swing that could happen on that day, we would gain maximum points from them. So, yeah, it was definitely needed. I think it hopefully has taken the pressure off the players a little bit now, because I think I could see a few nerves. It wasn't our finest display, but we got it over the line, which is the important thing.
Yeah, good. We obviously moved back to a back four for what felt like the first time in ages. You know, we've said it so many times on here that we need to go back to a back four. But it was a strange one. We all kind of expected Ivan to feature, and he didn't. But I think that the front three fared pretty well. Malpe got a little bit lost, I thought, in the pace of Brian and Wissa. But how do you feel about going back to a back four?
It did. I mean, first of all, on Tony, I don't know what you think about Tony, but I think it's just quite a strange concept in my head that a player can be injured, but not too injured. Injured enough to just be on the bench. I wonder in what circumstances we would have used him. I assume it would have been similar to Villa last week if we were drawing or losing with 10 minutes to go. But obviously there was a period in that second half, you know, before we scored. Well, you know, we're thinking, is he going to come on? You know, how long can he play for? It kind of reminded me, I think, Roy Hodgson at Crystal Palace earlier this season. I think it was either Eze or Elisa. I think it might have been Eze. He put him on the bench when he was allegedly injured, and then brought him on at half time, I think, when they were losing against somebody. And early in the second half, he came off and he was criticised for aggravating the injury. And everyone was like, how injured do you need to be to then be on the bench? Which I think is weird. So I don't know. What's your view on that?
I'm not surprised that he's kind of kept him off for this game. And I think that there are bigger games coming up. I know it sounds crazy because Sheffield United was a huge game, given the fixtures of the teams around us as well. We needed to actually win it. But it kind of felt like he was saying that there are bigger teams and bigger games coming up in his pre-match stuff and post when it was announced that Ivan wasn't going to be playing. It kind of felt like he was saying there are bigger games afoot. And I felt like going into Luton next week away is a bigger game than Sheffield United at home, knowing that realistically Luton were going to lose and Sheffield United can't catch us. Going into next week is a bigger game. So saving him for Luton away and Everton away, I felt like that was the bigger games that he's going to step into. But as a whole, I felt like we looked like a team, you know, that hadn't really played that formation for a long time in the first half. And I can't really think of any chances that we created like off of our own back. There was the one chance where they've tried playing out from the back and Ahmed Hodzic has put the ball into Wiss's feet, I think it is, and he's flicked it over the top for Neil to go for and it goes narrowly wide. But talking about Neil Maupay, what did you think about his kind of overall performance?
I thought he was better than Wissa. I didn't really like Wissa on the left in this game. I would have gone with KLP even before he came on at the end and looked quite good. I would have gone with KLP on the left and probably Wissa up top. He was decent. I think he, obviously, the chance he had, it was quite instinctive. He didn't have very long to think about it. Obviously, the keeper was rushing out, and I guess he was a bit unlucky to poke it wide. But it wasn't his worst day. It also wasn't his best day, but I think you could say that for a lot of those, the team out there at the weekend. I thought Keane Lewis-Potter deserved a chance, especially a lot of the time he seems to play. It's a left wing back. And I thought he deserved a chance on the left wing with others to come on.
Yeah, speaking about KLP, I thought he was actually pretty good when he came on. He did have that one chance. The keeper's pulled out a good save just before, I think, the Onyeka goal.
Yeah.
He's picked it up out wide. He's beat a couple of players and got a strong effort on goal and the keeper's pushed it out for a corner. But overall, I thought that he actually played pretty well. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him pushing for a start ahead of Wissa and things like that as well, moving into these games.
I would say next week, I mean, we'll go on to our teams for next week, I guess. But yeah, I think I would start him. I think he looks bright. I think he's not afraid to beat players. You know, he can be quite direct, you know, with his running. He'll get a shot away and he's not afraid to do that. And I think with a bit of confidence and if he gets some momentum back at the ad around Christmas time, and generally as a team we weren't doing very well at all, then, you know, I think we could start to see his potential.
Agreed. I thought Lerucci, Sheffield United's fullback, did quite well in keeping Brian quiet for the majority of that first half, and I can't really remember him having much of a sniff. And it was when Lerucci went off for McAtee that we started to have a bit more success down that side, and that's kind of where the goal came from. Obviously, Brian knocks the ball inside to Damsgaard, and Damsgaard just seems to pick the ball up on the halfway line and just run and run and run. People are shouting for him to square it. I don't know if you was one of those people. I was screaming for him to square it to the back.
Oh, he tried to square it.
He tried to square it. But Mike was going to ask myself here how I felt about Damsgaard's performance. And I'm so gutted for Mikael Damsgaard. So gutted. The first goal obviously goes down as an own goal. It was a massive deflection, which puts it into the bottom corner. But he did the right thing, actually, when I think about it. And when you watch the highlights, he didn't really have a clear pass. So he kept the ball as long as he could and drove up the pitch as far as he could. And I think he's made the right decision there. But then VAR disallows that second goal for what looks like an innocuous bump together between Collins and McBurney. So they disallow his first goal. And I was in pure ecstasy. I was probably in the same feeling that Callum was when Onyeka scored. I was so happy for Mikael Damsgaard. And then they disallow it. But it's kind of back-to-back games now where he's been one of the standout players on the pitch, Villa and Sheffield United. What do you make of his performances over the last two games and the fact that he has kind of stepped up to the level that we expected from him when we brought him in?
Yeah, I mean, I was a fan when he initially came in, and then more recently, up until the last couple of games, I've been starting to think, you know, it's now or never kind of for him, because, you know, we can't, at some point, players have got to show the promise that we signed them for. And I felt that Lewis-Potter, we had started to see that around Christmas. I thought Damsgaard, we saw it one or two games last season, that Fulham game last season. But then this season, we hadn't really, and he found himself out the team behind Yarmo sometimes. But no, it was very good. I also felt really bad for him because it's not like he made the foul, the single foul. And that's not one I don't think VAR should be overturning because it's not clear and obvious. Didn't we also have the other offside goal? Wasn't it Zanka?
Zanka, but yeah.
I notice at these free kicks now, players are being pushed offside as it's coming in.
Yeah.
It was very obvious that the Sheffield United's defender's plan, obviously this wouldn't have happened before VAR because if it's tight, you know, it could well go the wrong way. But now they know for certain that if he's a hand offside, that it's going to get given. And it was very obvious when we had set pieces, they were just trying to shove Collins offside. So I think that's going to become a problem that will happen a lot more regularly going forward. But yeah, Damsgaard, I'm gutted for him because obviously it wasn't his foul. It was a very good goal as well. And that would have been his first goal since the free kick against England. And that was in the last Euros, and we're coming up to another one now. So yeah, I mean, I hope it still gives him confidence because he did score the goal. Obviously it got ruled out, but he knows he can do it. So I do hope that gives him confidence going forward.
Yeah, I was massively gutted for him, and I've kind of spoken up for him on so many episodes saying that it's gonna happen. All he needs is a goal. He gets the goal and they disallow it. For a pretty, like I said, innocuous challenge between Collins and McBurnie. McBurnie just falls over, but I completely agree with what you're saying, that I don't think that's one that VAR really need to be getting involved in at all. But, I mean, VAR looking to just be perfect at any opportunity that they can get, and I feel like if we hadn't won this game 2-0, or if we hadn't won this game, then we would be having a very different conversation about that challenge itself. But thankfully, at the end of the day, it hasn't really affected the outcome of the game. Zanka's goal, I don't think we really need to go much further on it because he was just offside. You know, it's not really one that we could argue with.
It's just a pushing for me.
Yeah, it's just a pushing. But the thing is, it happens with every team, and we do it to players, you know. So it's kind of one of those ones where as soon as he kicked the ball from the West Stand, I thought they were all offside anyway. So as soon as you put the flag up, but the lino put the flag up straight away. As soon as the ball was in the back of the net, the lino was up with his flag. So he must have seen that it was obviously not as close as maybe people thought it was. But that's two goals. Yeah. Also, two goals in two games for Zanka, albeit one was offside and one was possibly the worst goal anyone has ever scored. But that's two goals in two games for him. And I thought that, you know, defensively, again, for possibly the fourth game on the bounce, that we've looked pretty solid. We've looked pretty solid. You know, there was the one chance where in the first half where Brereton Diaz bumps Zanka off of the ball on the halfway line, and Zanka just is never catching him. They could still be running now and he wouldn't have caught him. He scuffs the shot. Flecken just puts his hand on the ball and picks it up. But other than that chance, I can't remember them having any clear-cut chances on our goal. I think that we defended pretty well.
Yeah, and I think playing a back four, I don't think it doesn't seem to significantly diminish our defensive capabilities. And I thought the same at Burnley as well. I don't think we looked any worse in a four than we sometimes do in a five. So I thought it was good. I mean, I don't think Sheffield United are the team that's going to offer the most. I don't think they're going to threaten us the most. But I think we said last week they weren't actually on terrible form coming into it. They drew at Chelsea the week before. So we did well. And obviously with Pinnock to come back into that back four or back five now, then I'm quite confident. I'm assuming he'll come in for Zanka. I'm quite confident that, you know, we can be relatively solid going forward.
Yeah. Touching on Pinnock coming back, he wasn't the only player to return from injury for this game. Sharda's come on in the 90th minute, 4 minutes later, provided an assist for Frank. What do you make of that little flick that he's done? I didn't actually think he touched the ball to start with, but watching the highlights, he's actually got a very smart little flick on the ball.
No, it's very subtle, and I'm pleased for him. Obviously, he's another player who was we were starting to really see his potential before he got injured with that goal against Palace. And obviously it's unfortunate he's had quite a long layoff, and obviously the worry is with players that have been out for this long, particularly if they're yet to really hit top form with Brentford, is that they might be back to square one a bit more. But no, I'm pleased that he looked bright. I'm pleased he got an assist. And I mean, even if he's going to be a substitute going forward, he's such a great player to bring on, especially if we are one up and the other team are pushing men forward. The last thing they want to come on with 5 minutes to go is, you know, our quickest player is going to stretch them going the other way. So, yeah, I mean, we've got a good forward line now. Everyone's fit in the forward line. And, you know, they all offer something slightly different, which I think is, you know, going to help us with these fixtures that we've got coming up.
So thinking about the fact that we've got everyone fit, just diving in a little bit here, we've spoken about KLP moving into that more advanced role and possibly pushing for a start against Luton and Everton's in the upcoming game. With Kevin Sciarra being, I wouldn't say fully fit, because obviously he's still returning from injury, he needs 90 minutes under his belt, probably at 75%. Pushing to be in the starting lineup with the players that we've got, including KLP, including Kevin Sciarra. What's our strongest front three? Because in my head, it has to be Brian, Ivan, and Sciarra as a front three. But KLP is making a massive case for himself for being part of that front three, and we all know how much of an impact sub Wissa can be. So, what do you think about that?
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Yeah, I mean, Mbeumo and Tony, I think, are obvious ones. I don't think there's an obvious case to drop either of those. I would go KLP now, but I think it does depend to an extent on who we're playing. If we're playing a team who we expect to be very attacking, who maybe an Aston Villa who play a high line, then I'd maybe go Sciarra because of his pace and how he can run in behind. But if we're playing, like, I mean, a lot of our games coming up are teams that we can probably consider ourselves, you know, equal with in terms of quality. And I think they may be more games for KLP, but obviously it does depend on form, and obviously we haven't seen Sciarra in a while, so I expect it'll be a little while before his first start anyway. But yeah, I think KLP deserves a start on the left, especially for these games we've got coming up.
Yeah, we've obviously got 5 games left now of this season. I mean, Luton, Everton are both away games, Fulham at home, Bournemouth away, and Newcastle at home. I kind of hope that we stick to a back four in all of those 5 games that we've got coming up, and actually utilising the fact that we've got all of these forward players available now, because it would be good to see us, you know, playing some more exciting attacking football between now and the end of the season. Let's move on to that second goal. Callum's obviously not here, unfortunately, and I'm sure he'll be massively gutted that he cannot get his word in about this one, but he must be over the moon that Onyeka has scored 1 week later after admitting himself that Onyeka was a bit shite against Aston Villa, which is quite amusing. So Callum, you got to hold your hands up to that one, mate. Obviously, thinking about other players on the pitch, I actually want to talk about Reguilon. I know we've spoken about Reguilon quite a bit over the past few weeks and how we kind of want him to be a bit of a mainstay in the team for the rest of the year. Obviously, he will be, but people want to keep him on moving into next season as well. A lot of Spurs fans on social media and other fans, like United fans as well, that have had him in their team, were saying he's not a back four defender. But I thought he was brilliant again this weekend in a back four. I thought he was fantastic. Couldn't have done no wrong for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a few crosses where I was thinking if Ivan was in the box, you know, that's who you'd want on the end of it. Obviously, it's slightly more difficult when more pays your striker for the day. But, I mean, in terms of his end product and him going forward, if you combine that with Rico Henry's one-on-one capability and his pace, then you probably have the perfect left back between them. In terms of a replacement for an injured player, you can't get better than that for the second half of the season. I mean, that was a brilliant deal that we did there, really, because it's obviously very difficult to replace anyone like that, because you can't really sign a left back if they know that as soon as Rico's back, they're going to be second choice. So I think it's a deal that's worked out for everyone. But I mean, in terms of whether it's even possible to keep him on, I think we're only paying half his wages. So that's the first problem. Secondly, I just don't see how we can keep both him and Rico Henry happy, because I don't realistically see Rico Henry a right back like Callum suggested in the past.
But no, I mean, I totally agree. And I still actually wouldn't pick Reguilon over Rico. I'd have Rico every day.
Yeah,
and I would be more tempted to move Reguilon to right back than I would to Rico if we had to keep the two. But we're ignoring the fact that Aaron Hickey is still our player as well, and he's a fantastic player. Before we move on to Luton, is there anyone else that you want to talk about? Any other performances you want to touch upon?
Not particularly. I don't think it was a game where many players, you know, really stood out. I think it was a result that we needed, and it kind of looked like that sort of game. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't us at our best. But, you know, I hope if we do get another 3 points soon, I hope that towards the end of the season, we will see us carry on playing a back four, and we will see us playing, you know, exciting football without that pressure above our heads of, you know, we need three or four more points. And I'm excited to maybe watch a few games, hopefully at the end of the season, without that pressure and without worrying that we still might go down. So, I mean, they all did what they needed to, but I don't think anyone in particular stood out.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I agree. So probably a good time to move on to what we've got coming up. We travel to Luton on Saturday after their 5-1 defeat away at Man City over the weekend, and us off of the back of our first win in 9, but also undefeated in 4, having drawn the previous 3, in which we could have picked up more points as well. How are you feeling going into this game?
I feel under less pressure than I would have if we didn't win ourselves on Saturday. I think if we win, we're safe. I think if we draw, we're almost there. And if we lose, it does start to look a bit uncertain again. But I don't think that we are first in line in terms of who are Luton looking at catching. Personally, I'd love Luton to stay up over Forest or Everton. I think it will be quite a difficult game, actually. I think they normally score, Luton, and they're normally in the game, and they're normally good fighters. I don't think their game at Brentford was the best example, because I think they had an off day that day. But generally, they're in games and they're not easy to beat, and they will work hard and they will do the ugly stuff. So we've got to be prepared for that, and we've got to be prepared for a good atmosphere. And we know they're looking at this game and they're saying, we kind of must win this game. So yeah, it's going to be big, and we can't take it lightly at all.
Yeah, Kenilworth Roads are going to be it's one of those dirty, gritty grounds that teams go to and they don't necessarily do very well in. I mean, you look at how Arsenal snuck past them 4-3, and they beat Brighton 4-0 at home as well. So they've had some very good results there this season, and it's going to be a massive game. Looking at the table, if we do win this game, we go 10 points above them with 4 games left of the season, so that's 12 points. They will need to win all 4 games to catch us, and us have to lose all 4 games. So you'd kind of think that we'd be almost, you know, home and dry at that point.
We'd be there. If we won, we'd be there. And there's a misconception that this season is a weak Premier League and we're only lucky because there's, you know, 3 not very good teams and 2 teams who had a points deduction. But even looking at last year's table, 3 more points this season, based on our points total now, would have also kept us up last year. So I don't think, you know, we're lucky, but you know, we are almost there now. We just got to keep going.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it would be interesting to see how we set up in this game going into it, because Luton do traditionally set up with a 3-4-3. Do we want us to stick with the back four, or do we revert to a back five? How would you go into this game?
I think we both want a back four, don't we? Shall we go for our lineups?
Yeah, we can go for it if you want to go for it.
I know
it
you
now.
Did one
yeah.
the other day and put it in the chat.
Yeah.
You want to share it with everyone?
Nah. Should have done that though, probably. I think obviously Flecken's going to be in goal. I want a back four. I don't know about you, but I want a back four. And I think it's pretty obvious who our left and right back is going to be. It's just a kind of argument between who our centre backs will be. So we're going to have Reguilon on the left and Rozev on the right. But for me, I want Pinnock to start this game. I want Pinnock and Collins as our two centre backs. What are you thinking?
Yeah, obviously, we don't know how fit Aya's going to be. Obviously, the rumour is that it's only minor and he should be back this weekend. Part of me was starting ahead of Collins just because I think Collins is prone to the odd bad game. I think when Collins is at his best and when Aya's at his best, there's not much between them. But I think perhaps Aya's is slightly more consistent. So, obviously, fitness dependent. I would maybe go Iron and Pinnock, but if not, definitely Collins over Zanka if Pinnock's starting.
Yeah, I don't want Zanka in the starting lineup. If we have Pinnock, Collins, and Iron available, I don't think Zanka gets in there anyway. No. Obviously, there are reports of Norgaard being back available as well. Do you put him back in, or do you go with the same midfield three that we've had over the last couple of games of Jensen, Yanel and Damsgaard? Because I don't think that you could possibly justify dropping Damsgaard over the last two games.
Yeah, I mean, I don't believe these reports until I see them. We've had too many incidents this season where, you know, we're under the impression that someone's coming back and they're not, or they've had a setback, or even sometimes Thomas Frank says, for example, Ivan Toney's fit to start this weekend and he doesn't. So we don't know. I mean, I suspect that even if he is fit, he might not be match fit and he may not be able to start. So I would probably say he probably won't start. But obviously, if he is fully fit and if he is fully right, I don't think you can't not start him. Yeah. But I'd maybe drop Yanel if we had everyone available. And I'd maybe go Norgaard, Jensen and Damsgaard.
A Danish midfield. I'll leave the front three up to you, so I'm curious as to what way you go with this. So what's your front three then?
And Bumo, Tony, KLP,
you start him ahead of Kevin and Sharda as well.
I mean, in terms of also who would be the most effective on the bench, you've got Sharda's pace late on, and you've got, I mean, Wissa's always been a good substitute. He's often scored off the bench. And also, if you're trying to wind down a 1-0 lead, Neil Morpay is also not a bad person to bring on to wind up the opposition. So I think that's the perfect setup. Whereas if I think about KLP, would he be as effective off the bench? Maybe not. But do I want to see him do what he does from the start? Then, I think there's potential in there. And I think, you know, I think he's the sort of player that we could be talking about next week as man of the match if he starts. Because he's got that in him.
I want him to be given the opportunity to start. Do you know what I mean? He always, if he starts, he plays at a left wing back, and it's not really fair on, or right wing back, whichever side he either plays, it's not fair on him as a forward player to be always chucked in that scenario and not be given the opportunity to play in his actual position. So I agree with it. I agree that I would go with that front three as well. I think that Wissa is far too good of an impact sub to be starting all of the games that he has started, but he's also had the luxury of being one of the only fit forward players we've had for the majority of the season. Yeah, I think that is actually, I don't want to jinx it and say something bad, but it's possible that he has been our only mainstay player, apart from obviously when he went away to AFCON, so we didn't have him for that time. But thinking about Luton, we're definitely going to have to play better than what we did on the weekend if we want to be getting the 3 points at Kenilworth Road. They'll be right up for this game, especially considering the last home game that they had where they turned, a 1-0 deficit around to beat Bournemouth 2-1. How do we need to approach this game? Do we go in fast and just try and get ahead as quickly as we can? Or do we keep the ball, tire them out? How do we go into this game?
I think we have to. We've got to want it as much as they're going to want it, because they are literally fighting for their lives now. There's really not many games left, and this is one of the ones that they would have identified, that, and they probably do really need to get something out of this one. So, you know, I know it's hard. Sometimes you see two teams, one's under slightly less pressure than the other, and it's not that one team's not trying, but it's just one team just has that extra 1% because they know how critical it is. So we've got to be aware of that, and also aware that we're not out of it. So it's still important for us. If we're in mid-table, I could perhaps forgive them for not quite wanting it as much as Luton, but we've got to really cement it. You know, if all goes well, you know, by Sunday, we'll be safe. So, yeah.
I mean, there's a possibility that we go 10 points above the bottom three should we come away from Kenilworth Road with 3 points. But let's not forget the fact that should Luton beat us, which could happen at Kenilworth Road, they're back to being 4 points behind us again, and it becomes very nervy going into these last four games once again. We've been very fortunate in the way that the run that we've been on, I know we're saying about how the points tally would match up to last season, it would keep us up, but the run that we've been on, five other teams have been on just the bad run that we've been on, so it's kept us out of it. Per se, to a certain degree, but we need this game is huge for us. We win it, you can almost say we're home and dry. But if we lose it, and it's back to 4 points with four games to go, it's going to be squeaky bum time. It's going to be squeaky bum time.
I would definitely take a point
going there. Obviously, Ivan's likely to return for this game. How do you think that his presence is going to impact the way that we attack?
Well, you'd hope so. I mean, also for his England prospects, it's not going to do him any good. There's not many games left now. It's not going to do him any good. Watkins is scoring almost every week. He needs to, you know, start playing and stake his claim. Because at the moment, I'll be surprised if Watkins doesn't make it. And then it's just a question of whether he's going to take three strikers or two. Mm. He should impact. I mean, I think against Man United, he was a lot better, despite before the international break not perhaps being at his best. But, I mean, just his presence will occupy defenders. The ability to go long, the ability to play off him, especially with all the other attacking talent we've got now. And we still haven't seen Mbeumo and Tony from the start, I don't think. So that's obviously something exciting. We know how well they can work together. So obviously, I think it will be of great benefit if he can start at the weekend.
So are we kind of the agreement that one more win and we're kind of out of the woods? Or does it depend in which game the win comes in? Because I feel like if we win this weekend, you could almost say without any doubt that we are safe. But if we get a win, not this week, moving forwards, then it becomes a bit of a different story. So do you think that it's one win and we're safe, or is it dependent on the game in which we win?
I think one win and we're probably safe, but you never know. That might change based on if Luton go on a run or if... I mean, it's not that's the thing. It's not just Luton. So even if Luton did go on a run, I think they're basically level with Forest at the moment, who are also playing Everton this weekend, which is another quite big game at the bottom. And I'd be inclined to want Everton to win that because they've got a bit of an advantage on Forest. And then we just leave Forest and Luton down there to battle it out. I think one win's probably enough based on Luton. I don't think they'll necessarily go on that type of run, and then even if they do, Forest will also need to go on that type of run. I think I've seen Forest fixtures and they're not very nice. I think all of their home games are against quite one of, like, more of the top teams, and then they've got a couple of easier away games.
Well, they've got as same as we do, they've got five games left. Their two home games are City at home and Chelsea at home. But their three away games that they've got, they'll be looking at these as very winnable games. They are Everton away, Sheffield United away, and Burnley away. So those are three huge games for all four teams involved, being Forest, Everton, Sheffield United, and Burnley. They're all significant games. I mean, if we're looking at the table, Burnley are 6 points off it with 15 points still to play for. So there is obviously a slight chance that Burnley could still do it and Burnley could still stay up and drag Forest and Everton, I mean, further into it as well. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, especially the last few games, big games that they've got coming up. I think that might be a good place for us to wrap up this week's episode. Down in the comment section, we do want to hear from you. Are we out of the woods just yet? Who impressed you on Saturday in the 2-0 win against Sheffield United? And how do you think we should be approaching this Luton game? And what lineup should we go for? Please do let us know down below. The Ealing Road podcast will be back next week to reflect on hopefully three more points at Luton. And we will be looking ahead to Everton away, another big game. In the meantime, though, please do drop a comment down below your thoughts ahead of Luton. Subscribe to YouTube and Spotify channels. Also, give us a follow on our socials. That's at the Ealing Road on Twitter and at Ealing Road Pod on Instagram. Dan, it feels so much better doing this after a win. Thanks for your help today, mate. I appreciate it.
No worries.
Up the beat. They've won a playoff campaign, and they've done it at Wembley. And for the first time in 74 years, Brentford will play in the top flight of English football. And he puts it in. Sergi Canon has scored the first.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owners' racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Podcast Network.